You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4 is our phone number. Today I'm going to ask the question, do you ever feel like a nobody? Like you are swimming in a sea of nowhere, nobody, nothing. You just don't feel like you have a place. Well, you know, I'm reminded of a time decades ago when my son was very young. We were college students and taking him everywhere. And we were there one time with a bunch of friends, and he was there just being a little kid. He was probably three. And for some reason, he wanted to participate. And everyone was talking. We're all talking our little college stuff. Probably eight people there at the table. And when we got out, this little teeny boy looked very down. And I said, well, what's wrong? And he said, well, I felt like no man in the middle of nowhere. And I thought, oh my gosh, my sweet little boy is coming up with this kind of thing right now. But I understood what he meant. And of course, my heart went to him as a mom with a little boy. But at the same time, these little lessons that you learn, that you can learn from every own kids, strangers, they stay with you if you allow them to. And you don't just think of them in a little sterile context of being a mom or something. Oh, that's, isn't that cute that that's what my child said? They're actually speaking. And many children are definitely, as you already know this, they're voices of God. That's the way we have things. That's the way we do things. So when you feel, or do you feel, and I know you do, if you, and let me back up, if you are a person who has been abandoned, if you're a person who's been betrayed, if you're a person who has been harmed by someone who should have loved you, if you are a person who's been harmed by somebody your parents trusted when you were little, if you are, if been harmed by the emotional scars from war, you know what it is to feel like nobody. If you trusted your husband till death do us part, or your wife, and then come to find that they, as some people do, a woman recently found out that her husband was one of these things you see on television, had an entire second family for 14 years of their marriage. So, you know, and then you, who am I? Where's my reality? Where are my feet? What are we, you know, your mind goes into a freeze and you're wandering around aimless. You're wandering around a no, but no man, nowhere, because everything that you believed was true is not true. Everything that you hung your hat on is not there. It was false. It was an illusion. Now, we talked a bit yesterday, in fact, we talked a lot yesterday about from the quoting from Benjamin Hoff from the Day of Piglet, and he was quoting Chung Tse, who was born 275 years before Christ, Chinese, and he was a Taoist, and he was talking a lot about illusion, about standing grounded, about how if we are believing one thing but yet acting in an opposite way, that we really have no ground to stand on. And that is really the way it is. I said yesterday that I would really like to, and you please all bear with me, I have a bit of a cold this morning, so I don't know what my voice is going to do for the rest of this program. But I said yesterday I was going to start looking at Riding the Dragon, which is a book by Robert J. Wicks, which is 10 Lessons for Inner Strength in Challenging Times. Well, what could be more challenging than feeling like you've lost your identity? People who have been married 65 years and their spouse dies, they lose their identity. People who have been a mother and a wife and their husband suddenly dies or leaves them, or like this other woman found out that her husband had a whole other family, they're at a huge loss. It's a beyond a challenging time. People who come back from war, a friend of mine just told me of, asked me to pray for a friend of hers whose 30-year-old son had come back from war, had a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and his wife left him for someone else. And, you know, he seemed like he was doing okay. Had some post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't know whether it was treated or not. I don't know the people. But he committed suicide. In fact, I know he had a good job because he was able to get some of the ways that he did that from his job. So, and I know what his job is. We won't say that over the air, but so he had a good job. He had kids, and it wasn't a new thing, but that's what happened. So everyone's life is completely and unalterably changed forever because of his pain and despondency and feeling like a no man in the middle of nowhere. So Robert J. Wicks, in his Riding the Dragon, 10 Lessons for Inner Strength in Challenging Times, says this in his chapter that's called Prune Carefully and Often. He said, if only we could remember to prune away the unrealistic expectations, then the simple gifts we have could be shared without so much stress. They could reap rewards in sometimes unseen ways, no matter what the apparent results seem to be. But it is not easy to withstand the influence of a world so bent on overt accomplishments and public achievements. Still, when we are able to set aside the need for ongoing successes and ceaseless praise, not only will we feel a sense of joy, but we will touch many others with that same joy as well. So another story here. I'm reminded 2 days ago, I was taking my car to a place I'd never taken it before. It was disaster. Kept blowing out the taillight. Every light I kept changing, it kept blowing it out. Literally blowing it out. It broke my taillight every single time. And I'm wondering what the heck. And I thought it might be some big electrical problem. Well, it turned out to be something very simple, which I actually saw, by the way. And when I was changing the bulb, I actually saw what I thought, I wonder what that is. That looks like that could be the problem. And I just shined it on because it didn't make sense to me. And these are always lessons like, no, would you please follow what your instinct is here? Not always follow your heart and your emotion, but what harm would it have done to check that out for a second? But it led me to this very great mechanic. And I was on, it was Tuesday, so I was on my way to volunteer and I didn't have much time and I needed dog food. So I had no clue where I knew exactly what kind of food I needed and what store had it. So I got directions and followed to a store in a whole area that I've never been in before. Go into the store, and there's a woman who has a little child in her shopping cart, and he's dressed in a little dinosaur onesie, a little dinosaur pajama, only, you know, with the little hat, the little dinosaur head and the little claw feet. And he's about 3 years old, and he's just adorable. And so I'm fawning over this little boy in a dinosaur onesie, and the woman looks like probably grandma. And so I start fawning over that, and she's Mexican and she doesn't speak very good English and I don't speak any Spanish, but we started connecting over this, her little grandson. And then we got to talking, and this is what I want to tell you about how you have no idea what your gifts are You have no idea. And you have no idea when God uses who and why and where. So here's this woman. We're talking at the end of an aisle near the cereal and just about this little boy and where she got this little onesie. And she's telling me, you know, a garage sale, $2. And I noticed that she has a little thing around her neck. And it was a very beautiful medallion, small, but I recognized, and I couldn't see it easily, but I could see the colors. So I wasn't sure what it was, but I knew it was Catholic. And so I said, oh, you know, look, that's very pretty. And she said, Sacred Heart of Jesus. And then she turned it around on the other side and she said, Immaculate Heart of Mary. And remember, several months ago, those of you who have followed me on this journey, that I was introduced, basically, almost as if I'd never known it, to the Sacred Heart of Jesus just on my walk with Mozart one day, when I happened to look down and saw this little heart-shaped rock with, it was white with red in the center of it. And I thought, wow, it looks like Sacred Heart of Jesus. And I walked right over it thinking, you know, not just like flippantly, not even thinking about it. And then I thought, no, go back and get that. And when I had it, I did get it. When I had it, I brought it back upstairs when I got home and it caused me to start looking. Well, I forgot what that's even about. I just know the picture. And then that opened up a whole other realm of devotion for me. So we start talking about that. We start understanding that she had lost a daughter to multiple sclerosis. I have a sister with multiple sclerosis. We started talking. We started talking about prayers and prayer groups. And we probably were there 45 minutes. And she asked me for names and situations and putting us and all of us and even Redbox Media to prayer. So isn't that awesome? We'll get more to that on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle Fiorello. This is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you are so patient with me today as I stumble along and not even remembering my own name. But the reason is very different from the rock song. I just caught something along the way, some little bug, and here we go. We're going to be in for some heat wave, I hear, maybe up to 115. I can't even hardly imagine that at this early in the season. And I know the deserts are looking at maybe 120. That's like, wow, it certainly is a brutal situation. And I'm sure everywhere around the country, there's at some point this summer, there's going to be some really interesting weather. So in finishing up my story of this lovely lady, so she gave me, we exchanged phone numbers. She took my name. She took the last names of all the people in my family and my extended family, and she is putting them to prayer. And she goes to the mission, and she has a couple other groups, and one is completely devoted. It's all in Spanish, but it's completely devoted to the Sacred Heart. And she just said, once you give yourself and your troubles, and you begin your devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, once you do, this is what she's telling me. And she had a daughter who died at 23 from multiple sclerosis. But she said, once you do that, your whole world opens up. And I believe her. So this ties into what I say all the time. You don't know who you are. It's not only that you don't understand and you don't know where your angels are going to come from, who God's going to choose to talk through you. Or to you. I mean, we seem to think, well, let me finish. You also don't know, you are that woman talking to me. Only it's in your neck of the woods with whoever you run into. So we are both those things for each other. I don't know what I was to her. but whatever I was to her. You cannot tell me that that is just mere coincidence. I have too many of those things happen in my life. Too many of those things happen in my life. Every day, it's mind-boggling. But I have to put the, I have to put it at the foot of the cross and say, this is how you're using me right now, somehow. But not because you're using me. You're using her too, obviously. I mean, I'm going with my, tearing my hair out because I'm all stressed out. I don't want to leave my dog at home. I'm running late. I'm doing all kinds of things for this program on my end. And, you know, I'm just like, oh my gosh. And I'm almost canceling. I don't even know this person I'm going to take my car to. And what if it's, you know, very expensive? What if the whole electrical system's out and I'm all worrying? Everything I tell you not to do, I'm doing. So I'm worrying, I'm panicking, and I'm thinking I'll never make it down to the mission in time to volunteer. And I was supposed to be there early so I could help organize a little bit of singing. And, you know, just all this stuff is going on. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. And my dog is in the car and I'm thinking, how's that going to work when we've got, I don't even know what the place is like. So he'll probably be barking at anyone that comes along. And I just, you know, I was just like way a million different boots on the ground places. That's all I was thinking about. So knowing that I was just running so late because I was running, talk about God using everything, any place, any time, doesn't matter. It was precisely because I was running so late and I'm thinking, okay, how the heck am I going to feed him? Well, I guess I'll just go and get his dog food. Even though I have dog food at home, I'll get his dog food at the store and I'll, I happen to have a bowl because my car's a disaster. I happen to have a dog bowl in there along with a bunch of other dog things. So I'll just feed him in the car, you know, feed him right outside the car. That's what I'll have to do and get down to that, to my volunteer work. So that's how I came about that store. And why in the world, it took me a while. I was actually on the phone talking to my son. So I was staying in the parking lot for several minutes thinking, you know, hearing in my own self the clock ticking. And it just so happened that my feet and her feet and that boy's little desire and tenaciousness, because she said that he always wears that, he just, you can't get him out of that little dinosaur outfit, and he wasn't going to go until he got that dinosaur outfit. So God used that child. See how that works? God used the child to do what children do. I want the dinosaur outfit. This is what I want. I want this onesie. But everything had to happen in just the precise time for me to run into that woman and for her to keep me. It's like that water on a marathon run. It's like, here, take that drink of water. Just enough to recenter me into, yeah, this is what it's about. To have her life help me rethink on my sister, to have her help reset my button to remember, you know what, remember what you talked about with the Sacred Heart of Jesus, Michelle? You know, maybe you need to kind of keep that going, keep that alive. And then just the fact that she's there and so willing to talk, and she could hardly speak English, but we were there 45 minutes together. And it did put me a little late, by the way, but it was a necessary thing. It was lovely. And it turns out, you know, unbeknownst to me, that the people that I was supposed to meet early didn't show anyway for the volunteer stuff. So it all worked out. It's just that we cannot see the forest for the trees, right? So that story was very heartening to me. And you know, I'm going to go into yet another story. So I'm looking around and I'm looking for places to rent. And I'm looking around and and just all of a sudden pops up a thing like within 2 minutes of when I was looking. And I go over to this woman's house and here's this darling beach California girl. Just, I don't even know how old she is, but super young, really darling, sweet person. Well, it turns out as we start talking, she's a heart of gold. It's unbelievable. She's taking care of all these dogs. They're beautiful. It's wonderful. She's going to be moving. And she makes her living in ways that are not, we would never want our daughters to make their living. And see, this is what happens. Why we start talking about this, only God knows. And so then it comes to down to little, as we're talking about, you know, the, this room and that room and the dogs, that's not what she really wants to do in life. And then she starts talking about what she really does want to do in life. And so I can see the picture. I can see it coming before me, and I can see her talents. I can see her art. She's a very beautiful artist. She has compassion. She has compassion for children who have cancer. She says amazing things, and yet she's engaging in this way that she makes her living. That again, no one would want their daughter to do that. So. This conundrum, you know, I'm going to do it just so long, just long enough until I get everything set up. And then I'm going to jump over to the things I really want to do. So we had opportunities. Not only did she teach me about letting your talent shine, because she let them shine anyway, and not getting bogged down by what you are or what you're doing at the moment. Also, it gave us an opportunity to open up the possibilities, not just for her, but for me too, that your current circumstances do not have to define you, but you cannot wait for everything to be perfect, because you could be brought down by them. And that's where our discussion went. If you stay too long waiting for everything to be perfect, you may be brought down by the situation. There may be that lone person who is a little off, who might harm her, which happens all the time. At the same time, for most of us, we still have those things in our own life. And as I was telling her, it's like someone who says, a guy who says, well, I'm going to wait until I have my schooling, my job, my just everything in line. I'm going to have everything paid for, a house, a car, my washing machine, everything paid for before I ask my girlfriend to marry me, or before I even begin looking for a girl. Or a girl could do the same thing. And what happens? Years go by, and then maybe an illness happens, or a family member gets ill or has an accident. And then one thing pushes to another, to another, to another. Instead of moving with God as God speaks to us, we sometimes then say, okay, yeah, I get this now, but I'm going to do it my way. And as we read before the break from Robert J. Wicks, when he said, if only we could remember to prune away unrealistic expectations, then the simple gifts we have could be shared without so much stress. So if only we could, like with this particular person, could there be a way? And she's a reflection of me. Can there be a way? And the answer is, of course, yes. If we trust in God, trust in God. She doesn't have to be religious at this particular point. She knows there's something else out there, and the compassion of her heart and the things she's actually putting a lot of her energy into. She is actually working with children with cancer. She's actually involved in a lot of the, rescuing of animals. In a very good, fundamental, and hardworking way. She's also displaying a lot of her artistic work. So if you can just remove that unrealistic expectation that there's some ethereal, perfect moment when you can stop this and begin this, as they say, you don't know the place and time. So we're going to revisit this concept, get back to Robert Wicks on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you're with me on this road, Dr. Michelle Live, and I'm kind of like dragging along today with this little cold. So thank you all for being so patient with me. So, you know, we start out this program talking about feeling like nobody in the middle of nowhere. And that's the whole point, is that when we are nobody in the middle of nowhere, we are in a sea of nobodies in the middle of nowhere, and we all run into each other. And then if we're open and receptive, we hear a message, we give a message. We don't orchestrate it or design it. We don't set out thinking, I am going to go and preach about, you know, I'm sure she didn't wake up in the morning and thought, today I'm going to go preach about the Sacred Heart of Jesus, the woman I was telling you about before, when her little grandson was wanting that dinosaur outfit on. It was probably not even in her sphere of even thinking, yes, I'm going to go to everyone I meet, and especially people that don't talk my language, I'm going to go and we're going to talk in the grocery store. It doesn't work that way. It does, you know, some people, of course, you know, it's what you're called to do. But I tell you, most of the time, we're big old seething mass out here. And so, you know, we all run into each other, and we all have, if nothing else, your faithfulness and your inner strength and your intuition that is given to you in connection with the huge power source of God, when you plug that in, and your light starts to turn on, does the light bulb know that it's lit? Does it know that it's what it's illuminating? It's a light bulb. If you're a light bulb and you're plugged into God, you don't really know what it is you're illuminating. You're just plugged into God and you're giving off whatever you're giving off. And the attraction, whether it's a moth to the light bulb or whether it's, you know, the attraction of someone coming into a nice lit room, it's not up to you to decide how that's going to work out. So you learn to live with yourself. This is the lesson. Learn to live with yourself, because it is all about developing your inner self and your inner power and your inner strength. And in doing that, then you're not a nobody. You're only a nobody in nowhere when you deem that there's a somewhere that you're trying to attain, like the story I told you before the break. You're trying to attain a somewhere and a someplace to be someone. And if you really take a look, it's all a projection. It's an imagination. Now, you know, let's take that in a very pragmatic context. Of course, you say, I'm going to be a doctor, and you start out going to school. And so you plan it out. You have a dream and you achieve that dream. However, you can have 10 people. I can think of people in my own class. We all had the same dream or the same thought, whether it was a dream from childhood or whether it was just like, I think I'll do this. We get to medical school on short order. One of them, who was a military person, found out by the second year they had AIDS and was dead very shortly after that, before graduation. Another one had decided to run off and ran off, didn't want to do it anymore. Another one had started to get involved with drugs. Other ones who weren't sure what they really wanted to do end up being famous, famous cardiologists. Some people who thought they were going to be plastic surgeons end up being, you know, inner city general practitioners. So be careful what you define yourself as, and understand that your spiritual helpers are always there in the forms of the non-corporeal, which are our angels and saints and the procession of saints and our guardian angels and Jesus and, you know, the Holy Spirit and Mary and all those other entities out there, just like our sun and our wind and our other forces that we can't really see, keep us alive and nourish us and moving, gravity. And they give us, our spiritual helpers give us extraordinary powers of endurance. Just like on Tuesday. I mean, really, I was like, and I was probably getting this cold then. Well, I was getting this cold then too. And I'm, you know, it's just like, I was like, I just don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can finish this race. I'm ready to throw in the towel here. I'm tired. I don't want to go here tonight. I don't want to go volunteer. But just running into this woman and her little dinosaur-clad grandson gave me it was that water on the marathon. I was ready to go again because I thought, thank you, God. Cool. This is awesome. Great. And now I got somebody praying for me. Not only somebody praying for me, but a whole bunch of people whose language I can't even speak. They're all praying for me by name and my family. Isn't that cool? And it also at the same time renewed my strength. So in going to Robert J. Wick, his lesson number one, which is prune carefully and often, he says, we need only look at all the people who rushed to help after September 11th terrorist attacks in the United States to see the value of pruning. When needs are perceived, action is prized, no matter what the personal consequences are. Contrary to popular thinking, I don't believe most people are self-centered today. In fact, in my experience, the opposite is true. Now, that's something different than what we keep hearing and preaching and talking about in the news, or even in our own religion world. One of the greatest gifts we can offer when we reach out to those who need help, family members, coworkers, friends, and those we meet each day, is a sense of our own peace. Paradoxically, a serious obstacle to doing this is failing to take responsibility for properly focusing and limiting our giving. Now, doesn't that sound a little counterintuitive? Lest our reaching out to others becomes undisciplined activism prompted by anxiety, duty, and guilt. And then he puts in parentheses what I call superego compassion, in parentheses, that's his psychiatry or psychology background coming out, rather than by a true attitude of kindness, which is, quote, ego compassion, unquote. In 1985, I visited with Henry Nguyen while he was teaching at Harvard University to reflect on my work and life. As we sat in his kitchen, we discussed the early chapters of a manuscript I was writing on the topic of availability. Being a very practical person, as well as inspired, Nguyen emphasized not only the gift of availability, but also its dangers in the midst of one of his sentences. He stopped and said, quote, there must be a scriptural theme that makes the point I wish to emphasize, unquote. Then his face lit up and he said, quote, pruning. That's it. Pruning is the theme I was looking for. It not only speaks of cutting back, but also of the ultimate blossoming that takes place when it is done properly. Now, I'm going to stop here. What a beautiful way of putting, that's why these people are who they are, and I'm who I am, because I don't always think of these beautiful ways of putting things. But that's what he's talking about. Often we take the literal. Join this group, help with the church, go here, go there. And we miss, we're not pruning, we're unbridled growth. I have been unbridled growth. And as he said later in this chapter, dealing with unrealistic expectations. So you're kind of going to and along. And all of a sudden, example of unbridled growth is assuming everything's going to stay status quo. It's the age old running up your credit cards, thinking that you're going to have your job tomorrow or buying the house. I mean, I've certainly been a product of that myself, needing to buy a house at a certain time, tied to the market. The ink's not even dry and the market crashes and it's worth half of what it was. So now what do you do, right? So, you know, it's kind of like, well, hey, couldn't count on that, or counting on retirement. As you hear the age old story, I mean, I've heard this my whole life. I kept cataloging these things of people that I would run into, even as a kid and as a non-educated hippie, you know, just hearing people who would wait to do those things in life till they were retired. We're waiting to take that trip. We're waiting to take that pilgrimage. We're waiting to go to Hawaii. We're waiting to go camping until we just have enough in the bank and we can, our kids are gone and we can, you know, take that trailer, get that trailer we always wanted, or that mobile home, or that ticket to our Lords and go. And then the day of retirement, sometimes a week after a stroke, death, heart attack, one of the kids gets sick. You do not know what's going to happen. And it is true, there's no time like the present. But again, if you do it in a way that's guided, you're never going to be able to skip over all the possible obstacles you could do today, what you feel like you should do. But it doesn't mean that you're not going to twist your ankle or break a bone or catch something like I did. So, you know, this is just the part. Sometimes we want to, there's an old song in the 60s says, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. And I love that line because that line can be taken many, many ways. Everybody wants the free ride. They want the let's, you know, pass go and collect $200 and not go to jail. Well, you know, so we are flying high and we trip. How many of you have done that? Kids do it all the time. And some of them get really embarrassed. Some of them cry at certain ages. Some of them get up, dust themselves off, and boom, you go. And the younger you are, the more tendency you have to like scream and cry for a second and get up and go play again. That's what we're supposed to be, like little children, like little children. So this is a really beautiful, beautiful road to go on. I know it's the end of the week, but we're going to go through these lessons. There's only 10 of them. And I think they're very, very important because they're going to help you with your mental health. They're going to help you with your physical health because the taxation of stress is high, higher than any physical tax you're going to pay. And believe me, we're paying some high taxes now, aren't we? So I'm Dr. Michelle. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am Dr. Michelle. You're with me on Dr. Michelle Live, and we are walking this road together, and you're helping me along with my little cold, and I have not, except for one time through this whole program, giving you our info. You can call or text 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me anytime, day or night, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also log on for past podcasts, yesterday's all the way down for a couple years, by going on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com. You can also get the app. And now, new. Oh, you can get the app through iTunes, which is awesome. And now new, you can become a friend of the show. So you just log on to breadboxmedia.com, click on friend of the show, and you take it from there. All right. So let me revert back, get a little Catholicism in here, because it really fits in to what I'm going to be talking about next. It is from our catechism, number 306. God is a sovereign master of his plan, but to carry it out, he also makes use of his creatures' cooperation. This use is not a sign of weakness, but rather a token of Almighty God's greatness and goodness. For God grants his creatures not only their existence, but also the dignity of acting on their own, of being causes and principles for each other, and thus of cooperating in the accomplishment of his plan. Okay, you got that? This is from our catechism, but how wise is that? Cooperating with him is what he wants you to do, but he's giving you the dignity of acting on your own, of being the cause and the principles for each other. And thus, in doing so, you are cooperating in the accomplishment of his plan. So when you go ahead and you say, well, who am I to say anything to that lady? Or, it's not up to me to follow the conversation. Or keeping your eyes down, or whoever you are. Now, you may not be that person who talks easily to people. I am. But that's okay, because there's going to be another way. I tried so hard to get into certain things because it felt good when I first reconverted. But I'm not the person who knits baby booties, millions of them. But there are women who do. There are men who do. But I'm just not that person. I wanted to be that person because that looked like the way to go. But I'm not that person. So whoever you are and wherever you're talents. You don't have to go, well, gee, I wonder what my talents are. Like this woman yesterday I told you about. She really didn't see it when I said, you know, look, I'm talking to you. You're a healer. And, you know, she, and her, what she's doing, as I told you, to make her living certainly is not a healing profession. But I said, look what you're doing, really. You do what you're doing because somehow you've convinced yourself this is the only way to make the money you want to make. But what are you really doing on your off time? You know, you're helping people with cancer and you're ministering to animals and keeping them clean and healthy and wonderful in your own home. You're an artist. Look at what you've done to the interior of your house. And she couldn't see it in that light. So we all have these things. We just don't see it. We can't see it in ourselves. So I want to continue on because Robert Wicks, in this little tiny book, it's a small book, check it out, Riding the Dragon, 10 Lessons for Inner Strength in Challenging Times. And we are going to go through this. Now, I'm not going to read every word because then I would be reading you a book, and that's not what we do here. But I do want to go lesson by lesson. And lesson number one was prune carefully and prune often. And when we stopped, we were stopping where Henry Nguyen emphasized that it is the pruning. When he was saying there must be a scriptural theme that we can go to here. I said, pruning, that's it. Pruning is a theme I was looking for. It not only speaks of cutting back, but also of the ultimate blossoming that takes place when it is done properly. Then he goes on, this theme has remained with me as I have moved through my life and work. It is rewarding to prune our inner life of the causes and tendencies that block true discernment of what burdens we should and should not carry. Now, that's a very potent sentence. And I'm thinking of us women because we tend to take on prescribed burdens that we think are noble, good, just. And I will tell you, I probably... a lot of my losses in my own life were because I had an imbalanced notion of what it meant to honor my mother and my father. And I myself got consumed by my own mother and father, who I love and who love me. But it doesn't change the fact that they had no shyness in creating that imbalance from the day I was born. And they had no shyness on utilizing that imbalance as their needs got bigger and bigger and bigger. And mine still had no place in their world. And so I fell right into it. No matter how educated I was, no matter how smart I was, no matter how many kids I'd raised, no matter how many tragedies I'd saved, no matter how many people I'd helped, no matter how many trauma survivors I worked with, I was still that little girl who had the dynamic in her family. And as the time went on and their needs got greater and greater and greater, and I was being, you know, patted on the back, not that I didn't do it for that, but priest, everybody, you know, this is awesome because it's honor thy mother and thy father. It's when I first came back in the church, but it was consuming me and the rest of my life was dying. And so at the end of the day, I was left with everything in my own personal life asunder. And, you know, it was an imbalance. It was a reversal. It was not a good relationship. That doesn't mean that I had bad parents. It just means that, or that I didn't love my parents and that they didn't love me. They had tons of tragedy in their life. And so on any good day, it was like, okay, well, yeah, I get it, you know, but no, I didn't take care of me. I did not follow God's commandment. And God's commandment, that's the hardest one to do. God's commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. And that implies you love yourself. And in loving yourself is to understand that you can't drown while you're saving someone else because you're both going to drown. Or you'll drown. And they'll, you know, I mean, that's kind of a bad analogy. But anyway, let me get back because that's what he's talking about. So I'm going to read this again, but you all do it. You do it in that you take on the burdens of the school, you know, oh, will you bake the cupcakes? Will you do this? Will you do that? Will you teach a class here? Oh, you're so teach a class here, teach a class there. Oh no, go ahead. You stay here. I heard someone yesterday talking about how they're debating because of their ideology, not wanting to be in a godless neighborhood with all the new laws coming down and all kinds of stuff. They felt it was better for everyone, for the husband to move away and get a job somewhere else while they stayed with the family. And it was like, no, you're going to splinter. You're going to shatter. But it makes sense to us at the time. Now, sometimes you have to do things like that. But there's a difference between choosing to do something that is going to cause a split if you don't have to, or absolutely having to do it and working like heck to bring it back together. In other words, if you're a single mom and you got three kids and you got to work at night, you're a single mom, you got three kids, you got to work at night. They know that. God knows that. You know that. And you will not reap the split that if someone else who does it out of selfish motivations does the very same thing. We have a very short period of time, so I want to finish what he has to say here. Dr. Wick says, this theme has remained with me as I have moved through my life and work. It is rewarding to prune our inner life of the causes and tendencies that block true discernment of what burdens we should and should not take. And then he talks and says, in my travels, I heard a story about a priest who spent part of each night making sandwiches for the homeless. He would travel around the poorer parts of the city and distribute them. Even though his day was already full, his late night activity didn't overwhelm him. It actually made him happy. He didn't do it out of guilt, duty, or external pressure. He shared freely and openly in a way that made a difference for him. Even when the street people rebuffed his offer of food, he didn't feel rejected or angry because he wasn't doing it for the reward or acceptance or appreciation. The media found out about him and printed a story about his work instantly. His reputation grew and he became a minor celebrity. The public, even his fellow priests, started sending him money to support his ministry. Much to their surprise, he sent back the money to everyone with a one-line note that said, quote, this is the priest now, quote, make your own damn sandwiches, with an exclamation point, unquote. And then Robert Wicks goes on to say, this man obviously knew who he was. He didn't let the needs, expectations, and projections of others infect his own simple sense of mission in life. He wasn't manipulated by the reactions, even flattery, of others, as many of us are. His sense of personal satisfaction wasn't dependent primarily on the approval of others. Now, we're going to stop there for today, but take that back, sew that back to the beginning of the program, because this man had a sense of self. He was at once adulated by everyone, and then he just said, no, and that's, I can't do this way. No. And he went on, and because he was not a no man, you are not a no man in the middle of nowhere, a nobody. You are huge in this life. You just have to prune away those extraneous burdens and grasp onto who you are. Well, I am Michelle, Dr. Michelle, and we will see you tomorrow. Dr. Michelle.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.